Chapter 10. The Hunt Begins. Ingtar set a fast pace for the beginning of a long journey, fast enough that Rand worried a little about the horses. The animals could keep up the trot for hours, but there was still most of the day ahead, and likely days more beyond that. The way Ingtar's face was set, though, Rand thought he might intend to catch those who had stolen the horn in the first day, in the first hour. Remembering his voice when he swore his oath to the Ammerlin seat, Rand would not have been surprised. He kept his mouth shut, though. It was Lord Ingtar's command. As friendly as he had been to Rand, he still would not appreciate a shepherd giving advice. Huron rode a pace behind Ingtar, but it was the sniffer who led them south, pointing the way for Ingtar. The land was rolling, forested hills, thick with fir and leather leaf and oak, but the path Huron set led almost straight as an arrow, never wavering except to go around a few of the taller hills, where the way was clearly quicker around than over. The gray owl banner rippled in the wind. Rand tried to ride with Matt and Perrin, but when Rand let his horse drop back to them, Matt nudged Perrin, and Perrin reluctantly galloped to the head of the column with Matt. Telling himself there was no point riding at the back by himself, Rand rode back to the front. They fell to the rear again, Matt again urging Perrin.
"Burn them. I only want to apologize."
He felt alone. It did not help that he knew it was his own fault. Atop one hill, Uno dismounted to examine ground churned by hooves. He poked at some horse droppings and grunted.
"Bloody well moving fast, my lord."
He had a voice that sounded as if he were shouting when he was just speaking.
"We've not made up an hour on them. Burn me, we may have lost a flaming hour. They'll kill their bloody horses the way they're going."
He fingered a hoofed track.
"No horse, that. Bloody trollic. Some flaming goat feet over there."
"We will catch them," Ingtar said grimly.
"Our horses, my lord. Does no good to ride them into the bloody ground before we do catch up, my lord. Even if they do kill their horses, bloody trollocs can keep going longer than horses." "We will catch them. Mount, Uno."
Uno looked at Rand with his one eye, then shrugged and climbed into his saddle. Ingtar took them down the far slope at a run, half sliding all the way to the bottom, and galloped up the next. Why did he look at me that way? Rand wondered. Uno was one of those who had never shown much friendliness toward him. It was not like Massima's open dislike. Uno was not friendly with anyone except a few veterans as grizzled as himself.
Surely he doesn't believe that tale about me being a lord.
Uno spent his time studying the country ahead, but when he caught Rand looking at him, he gave back stare for stare and never said a word. It did not mean much. He would stare Ingtar in the eye, too. That was Uno's way. The path chosen by the Dark Friends, and what else, Rand wondered. Huron kept muttering about something worse. Who had stolen the horn never came close to any village. Rand saw villages from one hilltop to another, with a mile or more of up-and-down country between, but there was never one close enough to make out the people in the streets, or close enough for those people to make out a party heading south. There were farms, too, with low-eaved houses and tall barns and smoking chimneys, on hilltops and on hillsides and in the bottoms, but never one close enough for the farmer to have seen their quarry. Eventually, even Ingtar had to realize that the horses could not keep on as they were going. Rand heard muttered curses, and Ingtar pounded his thigh with a gauntleted fist, but finally he ordered everyone to dismount. They trotted, leading their horses, uphill and down, for a mile, then mounted and rode again. Then it was down again and trot. Trot a mile, then ride a mile. Trot, then ride. Rand was surprised to see Loyal grinning when they were down on the ground, toiling up a hill. The Ogier had been uneasy about riding in horses when they first met, preferring to trust to his own feet, but Rand thought he had long gotten over that.
"Do you like to run, Rand?"
Loyal laughed.
"I do. I was the fastest in steading Shangtai. I outran a horse once."
Rand only shook his head. He did not want to waste breath on talk. He looked for Matt and Perrin, but they were still at the back. Too many men between for Rand to make them out. He wondered how the Shinarans could manage this in their armor. Not a one of them slowed or voiced a complaint. Uno did not even look as if he were breaking a sweat, and the bannerman never let the gray owl waver. It was a quick pace, but twilight began to close without any sight of those they hunted except their tracks. At last, reluctantly, Ingtar called a halt to make camp for the night in the forest. The Shinarans went about getting fire started and setting picket lines for the horses, with a smooth economy of effort born of long experience. Ingtar posted 6 guards in pairs for the first watch. Rand's first order of business was finding his bundle in the wicker panniers from the pack horses. It was not hard. There were few personal bundles among the supplies. But when he had it open, he let out a shout that brought every man in the camp erect with a sword in hand. Ingtar came running.
"What is it? Peace, did someone get through? I did not hear the guards." "It's these coats," Rand growled, still staring at what he had unpacked.
One coat was black, embroidered with silver thread, the other white, worked in gold. Both had herons on the collars, and both were at least as ornate as the scarlet coat he was wearing.
"The servants told me I had 2 good serviceable coats in here. Look at them."
Ingtar sheathed his sword over his shoulder. The other men began to settle back down.
"Well, they are serviceable."
"I can't wear these. I can't go around dressed like this all the time."
"You can wear them. A coat's a coat. I understand Moraine Sedai herself saw to your packing. Maybe I, Sedai, do not exactly understand what a man wears in the field."
Ingtar grinned.
"After we catch these Trollocs, perhaps we'll have a feast. You will be dressed for it at least, even if the rest of us are not."
He strolled back to where the cook fires were already burning. Rand had not moved since Ingtar mentioned Moraine.
"What is she doing? Whatever it is, I will not be used."
He bundled everything together again and stuffed the bundle back into the pannier.
"I can always go naked," he thought bitterly.
Shinarans took turns at the cooking when they were in the field, and Massima was stirring the kettle when Rand returned to the fires. The smell of a stew made from turnips, onions, and dried meat settled over the camp. Ingtar was served first and then Uno, but everyone else stood in line however they happened to come. Massima slopped a big ladle of stew on Rand's plate. Rand stepped back quickly to keep from getting the overflow on his coat and made room for the next man while sucking a burned thumb. Massima stared at him with a fixed grin that never reached his eyes until Uno stepped up and cuffed him.
"We didn't bloody bring enough for you to be spilling it on the flaming ground."
The one-eyed man looked at Rand and left. Massima rubbed his ear, but his glare followed Rand. Rand went to join Ingtar and Loyal, sitting on the ground under a spreading oak. Ingtar had his helmet off, on the ground beside him, but otherwise he was fully armored. Matt and Perrin were already there, eating hungrily. Matt gave a broad sneer at Rand's coat, but Perrin barely looked up, golden eyes shining in the half-light from the fires before bending back to his plate.
"At least they didn't leave this time."
He sat cross-legged on the other side of Ingtar from them.
"I wish I knew why Uno keeps looking at me. It's probably this bloody coat."
Ingtar paused thoughtfully around a mouthful of stew. Finally, he said,
"Uno no doubt wonders if you are worthy of a Heronmark blade."
Matt snorted loudly, but Ingtar went on unperturbed.
"Do not let Uno upset you. He would treat Lord Agomar like a raw recruit if he could. Well, perhaps not Agomar, but anyone else. He has a tongue like a file, but he gives good advice. He should. He's been campaigning since before I was born. Listen to his advice, don't mind his tongue, and you will do all right with Uno."
"I thought he was like Massima."
Rand shoveled stew into his mouth. It was too hot, but he gulped it down. They had not eaten since leaving Fuldara, and he had been too worried to eat that morning. His stomach rumbled, reminding him it was past time. He wondered if telling Massima he liked the food would help.
"Massima acts like he hates me, and I don't understand it."
"Massima served 3 years in the Eastern Marches," Ingtar said. "At Ankar Dail, against the Aiel."
He stirred his stew with his spoon, frowning.
"I ask no questions, mind. If Landai Shen and Moraine Sedai want to say you are from Andor, from the Two Rivers, then you are. But Massima can't get the look of the Aiel out of his head. And when he sees you..." He shrugged. "I ask no questions."
Rand dropped his spoon in the plate with a sigh.
"Everybody thinks I'm somebody I'm not. I am from the Two Rivers, Ingtar. I grew tabak with my father and tended his sheep. That is what I am, a farmer and shepherd from the Two Rivers."
"He's from the Two Rivers," Matt said scornfully. "I grew up with him, though you'd never know it now. You put this Aiel nonsense in his head on top of what's already there, and the light knows what we'll have. An Aiel lord, maybe.
No, Loyal said. He has the look. You remember, Rand. I remarked on it once, though I thought it was just because I didn't know you humans well enough then. Remember? Till shade is gone, till water is gone, into the shadow with teeth bared, screaming defiance with the last breath, to spit in Sightblinder's eye on the last day. You remember, Rand?
Rand stared at his plate. Wrap a shufa around your head, and you would be the image of an Aielman. That had been Gawain, brother to Elaine, the daughter heir of Andor. Everybody thinks I'm somebody I'm not. What was that, Matt asked, about spitting in the Dark One's eye?
That's how long the Aiel say they'll fight, Ingtar said. And I don't doubt they will. Except for peddlers and gleemen, Aiel divide the world in two. Aiel and enemies. They changed that for Carrion 500 years ago. For some reason, no one but an Aiel could understand. But I do not think they will ever do so again.
I suppose not, Loyal said. But they do let the Tuatha'an, the traveling people, cross the waste. And they don't see Ogier as enemies either, though I doubt any of us would want to go out into the waste. I'll come to Steading Shangtai sometimes to trade for Sung Wood. A hard people, though.
Ingtar nodded. I wish I had some as hard, half as hard.
Is that a joke?
Matt laughed. If I ran a mile wearing all the iron you're wearing, I would fall down and sleep a week. You've done it mile after mile all day.
Aiel are hard, Ingtar said. Man and woman hard. I fought them and I know. They will run 50 miles and fight a battle at the end of it. They're death walking with any weapon or none, except a sword. They will not touch a sword for some reason. Or ride a horse, not that they need to. If you have a sword and the Aielman has his bare hands, it is an even fight, if you're good. They herd cattle and goats where you and I would die of thirst before the day was done. They dig their villages into huge rock spires out in the waste. They've been there since the breaking, near enough. Arthur Hawkwing tried to dig them out and was bloodied, the only major defeats he ever suffered. By day the air in the Aiel waste shimmers with heat, and by night it freezes. And an Aiel will give you that blue-eyed stare and tell you there is no place on earth he would rather be. He won't be lying, either. If they ever tried to come out, we would be hard-pressed to stop them. The Aiel War lasted 3 years, and that was only 4 out of 13 clans.
Gray eyes from his mother doesn't make him Aiel, Matt said.
Ingtar shrugged.
As I said, I ask no questions.
When Rand finally settled down for the night, his head hummed with unwanted thoughts. Image of an Aielman. Moraine Sedai wants to say you're from the Two Rivers. Aiel ravaged all the way to Tarvalin. Born in the slopes of Dragonmount. The dragon reborn.
I will not be used, he muttered.
But sleep was a long time coming.
Ingtar broke camp before the sun was up in the morning. They had breakfasted and were riding south while the clouds in the east were still red with sunrise to come, and dew still hung on the leaves.
This time Ingtar put out scouts, and though the pace was hard, it was no longer horse-killing. Rand thought maybe Ingtar had realized they were not going to do it all in a day.
The trail still led south, Huron said.
Until, 2 hours after the sun rose, one of the scouts came galloping back.
Abandoned camp ahead, my lord. Just on that hilltop there. Must have been at least 30 or 40 of them there last night, my lord.
Ingtar put spurs to horse as if he had been told the dark friends were still there. And Rand had to keep pace or be trampled by the Shannarans who galloped up the hill behind him. There was not much to see. The cold ashes of campfires, well hidden in the trees, with what looked like the remnants of a meal tossed in them. A refuse heap too near the fires and already buzzing with flies. Ingtar kept the others back and dismounted to walk through the campsite with Uno, examining the ground. Huron rode the circumference of the site, sniffing. Rand sat his stallion with the other men. He had no desire for any closer look at a place where Trollocs and Dark Friends had camped. And a fade. And something worse. Matt scrambled up the hill afoot and stalked into the campsite.
Is this what a Dark Friend camp looks like?
Smells a bit, but I can't say it looks any different from anybody else's.
He kicked at one of the ash heaps, knocking out a piece of burned bone, and stooped to pick it up. What do dark friends eat? Doesn't look like a sheep bone, or a cow.
There was murder done here, Heron said mournfully.
He scrubbed at his nose with a kerchief.
Worse than murder.
There were Trollocs here, Ingtar said, looking straight at Matt. I suppose they got hungry, and the dark friends were handy.
Matt dropped the blackened bone. He looked as if he were going to be sick.
They are not going south any longer, my lord, Huron said.
That took everybody's attention. He pointed back to the northeast.
Maybe they've decided to break for the Blight after all. Go around us. Maybe they were just trying to put us off by coming south.
He did not sound as if he believed it. He sounded puzzled.
Whatever they were trying, Ingtar snarled. I'll have them now. Mount!
Little more than an hour later, though, Huron drew rein.
They changed again, my lord. South again. And they killed someone else here.
There were no ashes there, in the gap between two hills, but a few minutes' search found the body. A man curled up and stuffed under some bushes. The back of his head was smashed in, and his eyes still bulged with the force of the blow. No one recognized him, though he was wearing Shinaran clothes.
We'll waste no time burying dark friends, Ingtar growled. We ride south.
He suited his own words almost before they were out of his mouth.
The day was the same as the day before had been, though.
Uno studied tracks and droppings and said they had gained a little ground on their quarry. Twilight came with no sight of Trollocs or dark friends, and the next morning there was another abandoned camp and another murder done, so Huron said, and another change of direction, this time to the northwest. Less than 2 hours on that track found another body, a man with his skull split open by an axe, and another change of direction, south again. Again gaining ground by Uno's reading of the tracks. Again seeing nothing but distant farms until nightfall. And the next day was the same, changes in direction, murders and all. And the next.
Every day brought them a little closer behind their prey, but Ingtar fumed. He suggested cutting straight across when the trail changed direction of a morning. Surely they would come on the trail heading south again and gain more time. And before anyone could speak, he said it was a bad idea, in case this once the men they hunted did not turn south. He urged everyone to greater speed, to start earlier and ride till full dark. He reminded them of the charge the Ammerlin Seat had given them, to recover the Horn of Valir and let nothing bar their way. He spoke of the glory they would have, their names remembered in story and history. In Gleeman's tales and Bard's songs, the men who found the horn. He talked as if he could not stop, and he stared down the trail they followed as if his hope of the light lay at the end of it. Even Uno began to look at him askance. And so they came to the River Erinin. It could not properly be called a village at all, to Rand's mind. He sat his horse among the trees, peering up at half a dozen small houses with wood-shingled roofs and eaves almost to the ground, on a hilltop overlooking the river beneath the morning sun. Few people passed this way. It was only a few hours since they had broken camp, but past time for them to have found the remains of the Dark Friend's resting place, if the pattern held. They had seen nothing of the sort, however. The river itself was not much like the mighty Erinin of story, here so far toward its source in the spine of the world. Perhaps 60 paces of swift water to the far bank, lined with trees, and a barge-like ferry on a thick rope spanning the distance. The ferry sat snugged against the other side. For once, the trail had led straight to human habitation, straight to the houses on the hill. No one moved on the single dirt street around which the dwellings clustered.
"Ambush, my lord," Uno said softly.
Ingtar gave the necessary orders, and the Shinarans unlimbered their lances, sweeping around to encircle the houses. At a hand signal from Ingtar, they galloped between the houses from four directions, thundering in with eyes searching, lances ready, dust rising under their hooves. Nothing moved but them. They drew rein, and the dust began to settle. Rand returned to his quiver the arrow he had knocked, and slung his bow on his back again. Matt and Perrin did the same. Loyal and Huron had just waited there, where Ingtar had left them, watching uneasily. Ingtar waved, and Rand and the others rode up to join the Shinarans.
"I don't like the smell of this place," Perrin muttered as they came among the houses.
Hurin gave him a look, and he stared back until Hurin dropped his eyes.
"It smells wrong."
"Bloody dark friends and Trollocs went straight through, my lord,"
Uno said, pointing to a few tracks not chopped to pieces by the Shinarans.
"Straight through to the goat-kissing fairy, which they bloody left on the other side. Blood and bloody ashes. We're flaming lucky they didn't cut it adrift."
"Where are the people?" Loyal asked.
Doors stood open, curtains flapped at open windows, but no one had come out for all the thunder of hooves.
"Search the houses," Ingtar commanded.
Men dismounted and ran to comply, but they came back shaking their heads.
"They're just gone, my lord," Uno said. "Just bloody gone, burn me. Like they'd picked up and decided to flaming walk away in the middle of the bloody day."
He stopped suddenly, pointing urgently to a house behind Ingtar.
"There's a woman at that window. How I bloody missed her."
He was running for the house before anyone else could move.
"Don't frighten her," Ingtar shouted. "Uno, we need information. The light blind you, Uno. Don't frighten her."
The one-eyed man disappeared through the open door. Ingtar raised his voice again.
"We will not harm you, good lady. We are Lord Agomar's oathmen from Faldara. Do not be afraid. We will not harm you."
A window at the top of the house flew up, and Uno stuck his head out, staring around wildly. With an oath, he pulled back. Thumps and clatters marked his passage back, as if he were kicking things in frustration. Finally, he appeared from the doorway.
"Gone, my lord. But she was there. A woman in a white dress at the window. I saw her. I even thought I saw her inside for a moment. But then she was gone, and..."
He took a breath.
"The house is empty, my lord."
It was a measure of his agitation that he did not curse.
"Curtains," Matt muttered. "He's jumping at bloody curtains."
Uno gave him a sharp look, then returned to his horse.
"Where did they go?" Rand asked Loyal. "Do you think they ran off when the Dark Friends came?
And Trollocs and a Murdrol, and Hurin's something worse? Smart people if they ran as hard as they could."
"I fear the Dark Friends took them, Rand," Loyal said slowly.
He grimaced, almost a snarl, with his broad nose like a snout.
"For the Trollocs."
Rand swallowed and wished he had not asked. It was never pleasant to think on how Trollocs fed.
"Whatever was done here," Ingtar said, "our Dark Friends did it. Hurin, was there violence here? Killing? Hurin!"
The sniffer gave a start in his saddle and looked around wildly. He had been staring across the river.
"Violence, my lord. Yes. Killing? No. Or not exactly."
He glanced sideways at Perrin.
"I've never smelled anything exactly like it before, my lord. But there was hurting done. Is there any doubt they crossed over? Have they doubled back again?" "They crossed, my lord."
Hurin looked uneasily at the far bank.
"They crossed. What they did on the other side, though..."
He shrugged. Ingtar nodded.
"Uno, I want that ferry back on this side. And I want the other side scouted before we cross. Just because there was no ambush here doesn't mean there will not be one when we are split by the river. That ferry does not look big enough to carry us all in one trip. See to it."
Uno bowed, and in moments, Ragan and Massima were helping each other out of their armor. Stripped down to breech clouts, with a dagger stuck behind in the small of the back, they trotted to the river on horsemen's bowed legs and waded in, beginning to work their way hand over hand along the thick rope along which the ferry ran. The cable sagged enough in the middle to put them in the river to their waists, and the current was strong, pulling them downstream. Yet in less time than Rand expected, they were hauling themselves over the slatted sides of the ferry. Drawing their daggers, they disappeared into the trees. After what seemed like forever, the two men reappeared and began pulling the ferry slowly across. The barge butted against the bank below the village, and Massima tied it off while Ragan trotted up to where Ingtar waited. His face was pale, the arrow scar on his cheek sharp, and he sounded shaken.
"The far bank. There is no ambush on the far bank, my lord. But..."
He bowed deeply, still wet and shivering from his excursion.
"My lord,
You must see for yourself. The big stone oak, 50 paces south from the landing. I cannot say the words. You must see it yourself.
Ingtar frowned, looking from Ragan to the other bank. Finally, he said,
You have done well, Ragan. Both of you have.
His voice became more brisk.
Find these men something to dry themselves on from the houses, Uno, and see if anybody left water on for tea. Put something hot into them if you can. Then bring the second file and the pack animals over.
He turned to Rand.
Well, are you ready to see the south bank of the Erinin?
He did not wait for an answer, but rode down to the ferry with Hurin and half the Lancers. Rand hesitated only a moment before following. Loyal went with him. To his surprise, Perrin rode down ahead of them, looking grim. Some of the Lancers, making gruff jokes, dismounted to haul on the rope and walk the ferry over. Matt waited until the last minute, when one of the Shinarans was untying the ferry, before he kicked his horse and crowded aboard.
I have to come sooner or later, don't I? He said, breathless, to no one in particular. I have to find it.
Rand shook his head. With Matt looking as healthy as he ever had, he had almost forgotten why he was along. To find the dagger. Let Ingtar have the horn. I just want the dagger for Matt. We will find it, Matt.
Matt scowled at him, with a sneering glance for his fine red coat, and turned away. Rand sighed.
It will all come out right, Rand, Loyal said quietly. Somehow it will.
The current took the ferry as it hauled out from the bank, tugging it against the cable with a sharp creak. The Lancers were odd ferrymen, walking the deck in helmets and armor, with swords on their backs, but they took the ferry out into the river well enough.
This is how we left home, Perrin said suddenly. A Tauren ferry. The ferryman's boots clunking on the deck and the water gurgling around the ferry. This is how we left. It will be worse this time.
How can it be worse? Rand asked.
Perrin did not answer. He searched the far bank and his golden eyes almost seemed to shine, but not with eagerness. After a minute, Matt asked,
How can it be worse?
It will be. I can smell it, was all Perrin would say.
Hurin eyed him nervously, but then Hurin seemed to be eyeing everything nervously since they had left Faldara. The ferry bumped against the south bank with a hollow thud of stout planks against hard clay, almost under overhanging trees, and the Shinarans who had been hauling on the rope mounted their horses, except for two Ingtar told to take the ferry back over for the others. The rest followed Ingtar up the bank.
50 paces to the big stone oak, Ingtar said as they rode into the trees.
He sounded too matter-of-fact. If Ragan could not speak of it. Some of the soldiers eased the swords on their backs and held their lances ready. At first, Rand thought the figures hanging by their arms from the thick gray limbs of the stone oak were scarecrows. Crimson scarecrows. Then he recognized the two faces. Changu and the other man who had been on guard with him. Nidao. Eyes staring, teeth bared in a rictus of pain. They had lived a long time after it began. Perrin made a sound in his throat, nearly a growl.
As bad as ever I've seen, my lord, Hurin said faintly. As bad as ever I've smelled, excepting the dungeon at Faldara that night.
Frantically, Rand sought the void. The flame seemed to get in the way, the queasy light fluttering in time with his convulsive swallows, but he pushed on until he had wrapped himself in emptiness. The queasiness pulsed in the void with him, though. Not outside for once, but inside.
No wonder looking at this.
The thought skittered across the void like a drop of water on a hot griddle.
What happened to them?
Skinned alive, he heard someone behind him say, and the sounds of somebody else retching. He thought it was Matt, but it was all far away from him inside the void. But that nauseous flickering was in there, too. He thought he might throw up himself.
Cut them down, Ingtar said harshly.
He hesitated a moment, then added,
Bury them. We cannot be sure they were dark friends. They could have been taken prisoner. They could have been. Let them know the last embrace of the mother, at least.
Men rode forward gingerly with knives. Even for battle-hardened Shinarans, it was no easy task, cutting down the flayed corpses of men they knew.
Are you all right, Rand? Ingtar said. I am not used to this either.
I am all right, Ingtar.
Rand let the void vanish. He felt less sick without it. His stomach still curdled, but it was better. Ingtar nodded and turned his horse so he could watch the men working. The burial was simple. Two holes dug in the ground, and the bodies laid in as the rest of the Shinarans watched in silence. The gravediggers began shoveling earth into the graves with no more ado. Rand was shocked, but Loyal explained softly.
Shinarans believe we all came from Earth and must return to Earth. They never use coffins or shrouds, and the bodies are never clothed. The Earth must hold the body. The last embrace of the Mother, they call it. And there are never any words except, the light shine on you, and the Creator shelter you. The last embrace of the Mother welcome you home.
Loyal sighed and shook his huge head.
I do not think anyone will say them this time. No matter what Ingtar says, Rand, there cannot be much doubt that Changgu and Nidao slew the guards at the dog gate and let the dark friends into the keep. It had to be they who were responsible for all of it.
Then who shot the arrow at the Ammerlin?
Rand swallowed.
Who shot at me?
Loyal said nothing. Uno arrived with the rest of the men and the pack horses as the last earth was being shoveled onto the graves. Someone told him what they had found, and the one-eyed man spat.
Goat-kissing Trollocs do that along the Blight sometimes, when they want to shake your bloody nerve, or flaming warn you not to follow. Burn me if it works here, either.
Before they rode away, Ingtar paused on his horse beside the unmarked graves, two mounds of bare earth that looked too small to hold men. After a moment, he said,
The light shine on you, and the Creator shelter you. The last embrace of the Mother welcome you home.
When he raised his head, he looked at each man in turn. There was no expression on any face, least of all on Ingtar's.
They saved Lord Agomar at Tarwin's Gap, he said.
Several of the lancers nodded. Ingtar turned his horse.
Which way, Hurin?
South, my lord.
Take the trail. We hunt.
The forest soon gave way to gently rolling flatland, sometimes crossed by a shallow stream that had dug itself a high-banked channel, with never more than a low rise or a squat hill that barely deserved the name. Perfect country for the horses. Ingtar took advantage of it, setting a steady, ground-covering pace. Occasionally Rand saw what might have been a farmhouse in the distance, and once what he thought was a village, with smoke rising from chimneys a few miles off, and something flashing white in the sun. But the land near them stayed empty of human life. Long swathes of grass, dotted with brush and occasional trees, with now and again a small thicket, never more than 100 paces across. Ingtar put out scouts, two men riding ahead, in sight only when they topped an occasional rise. He had a silver whistle hanging around his neck to call them back if Hurin said the trail had veered, but it did not. South. Always south.
We will reach the field of Taladar in 3 or 4 days at this rate, Ingtar said as they rode. Arta Hawkwing's greatest single victory, when the half-men led the Trollocs out of the Blight against him. 6 days and nights it lasted, and when it was done, the Trollocs fled back into the Blight and never dared challenge him again. He raised a monument there to his victory, a spire 100 spans high. He would not let them put his own name on it, but rather the names of every man who fell, and a golden sun at the top, symbol that there the light had triumphed over the shadow.
I would like to see that, Loyal said. I have never heard of this monument.
Ingtar was silent for a moment, and when he spoke, his voice was quiet.
It is not there any longer, Builder. When Hawkwing died, the ones who fought over his empire could not bear to leave a monument to a victory of his, even if it did not mention his name. There's nothing left but the mound where it stood. In 3 or 4 days we can see that, at least.
His tone did not allow much conversation afterwards. With the sun hanging golden overhead, they passed a structure, square and made of plastered brick, less than a mile from their path. It was not tall, no more than 2 stories still standing anywhere he saw, but it covered a good height of ground. An air of long abandonment hung about it. Roofs gone, except for a few stretches of dark tile clinging to bits of rafter. Most of the once white plaster fallen to bare the dark, weathered brick beneath. Walls fallen to show courtyards and decaying chambers inside. Brush and even trees grew in the cracks of what had once been courtyards. A manor house, Ingtar explained. The little humor he had regained seemed to fade as he looked at the structure. When Harad Dakar still stood, I expect the manormen farmed this land for a league around. Orchards, maybe. The Hardani loved their orchards.
Harad Dakar? Rand said, and Ingtar snorted.
Does no one learn history any longer? Harad Dakar, the capital city of Harden, which nation this once was that we are riding across.
I've seen an old map, Rand replied in a tight voice. I know about the nations that aren't there anymore, Marado, and Goaban, and Karalane. But there wasn't any Harden on it.
There were once others that are gone now, too, Loyal said. Mar-Haddon, which is now Haddon Merc, and Almuth, Kintara. The War of the Hundred Years cut Arthur Hawkwing's empire into many nations, large and small. The small were gobbled up by the large, or else united, like Altara and Murundi. Forced together would be a better word than united, I suppose.
So what happened to them? Matt demanded. Rand had not noticed Perrin and Matt ride up to join them. They had been at the rear, as far from Randall Thor as they could get, the last he had seen.
They could not hold together, the Ogier replied. Crops failed or trade failed. People failed. Something failed in each case, and the nation dwindled. Once neighboring countries absorbed the land, when the nations were gone. But they never lasted, those annexations. In time the land truly was abandoned. Some villages hang on here and there, but mostly they have all gone to wilderness. It is nearly 300 years since Harad Dakar was finally abandoned, but even before that it was a shell, with a king who could not control what happened inside the city walls. Harad Dakar itself is completely gone now, I understand. All the towns and cities of Harden are gone, the stone carted away by farmers and villagers for their own use. Most of the farms and villages made with it are gone too. So I read, and I've seen nothing to change it.
It was quite a quarry, Harad Dakar. For almost 100 years, Ingtar said bitterly. The people left, finally. And then the city was hauled away stone by stone. All faded away. And what is not gone is fading. Everything, everywhere, fading. There is hardly a nation that truly controls the land it claims on a map. And there is hardly a land that claims today on a map what it did even 100 years ago. When the War of the Hundred Years ended, a man rode from one nation into another without end from the Blight to the Sea of Storms. Now we ride through wilderness claimed by no nation for almost the whole of the land. We in the Borderlands have our battle with the Blight to keep us strong and whole. Perhaps they did not have what they needed to keep them strong. You say they failed, Builder. Yes, they failed. And what nation standing whole today will fail tomorrow? We are being swept away, humankind. Swept away like flotsam on a flood. How long until there is nothing left but the Borderlands? How long before we too go under, and there is nothing left but Trollocs and Murdrol, all the way to the Sea of Storms?
There was a shocked silence. Not even Matt broke it. Ingtar rode lost in his own dark thoughts.
After a time, the scouts came galloping back, straight in the saddles, lances erect against the sky.
A village ahead, my lord. We were not seen, but it lies directly in our line of march.
Ingtar shook himself out of his brown study, but did not speak until they had reached the crest of a low ridge looking down on the village. And then it was only to command a halt while he dug a looking glass from his saddlebags and raised it to peer at the village. Rand studied the village with interest. It was as big as Emmons Field, though that was not very big compared to some of the towns he had seen since leaving the Two Rivers, much less the cities. The houses were all low and plastered with white clay, and they appeared to have grass growing on sloping roofs. A dozen windmills scattered through the village turned lazily, their long cloth-covered arms flashing white in the sun. A low wall encircled the village, grassy dirt and chest high, and outside that was a wide ditch with sharpened stakes thick in the bottom. There was no gate in the one opening he could see in the wall, but he supposed it could be blocked easily enough with a cart or wagon. He could not see any people.
"Not even a dog in sight," Ingtar said, returning the looking glass to his saddlebags.
"Are you sure they did not see you?"
he asked the scouts.
"Not unless they have the Dark One's own luck, my lord," one of the men replied.
"We never crested the rise. We didn't see anyone moving then either, my lord."
Ingtar nodded.
"The trail, Hurin."
Hurin drew a deep breath.
"Toward the village, my lord. Straight to it, as near as I can tell from here."
"Watch sharp," Ingtar commanded, gathering his reins.
"And do not believe that they're friendly just because they smile, if there is anyone there."
He led them down toward the village at a slow walk and reached up to loosen his sword in its scabbard. Rand heard the sounds of others behind him doing the same. After a moment, he eased his, too. Trying to stay alive was not the same as trying to be a hero, he decided.
"You think these people would help Dark Friends?" Perrin asked Ingtar.
The Shinaran was slow in answering.
"They have no great love for Shinarans," he said finally.
"They think we should protect them, us or the Kyrianin."
"Kyrian did claim this land, once the last king of Harden died. All the way to the Erenin, they claimed it. They could not hold it, though. They gave up the claim nearly 100 years ago. The few people who still live here don't have to worry about Trollocs this far south, but there are plenty of human brigands. That's why they have the wall and the ditch. All their villages do. Their fields will be hidden in hollows around here, but no one will live outside the wall. They would swear fealty to any king who would give them his protection, but we have all we can do against the Trollocs. They do not love us for it, though."
As they reached the opening in the low wall, he added again,
"Watch sharp!"
All the streets led toward a village square, but there was no one in the streets, no one peering from a window. Not even a dog moved, not so much as a chicken. Nothing living. Open doors swung, creaking in the wind, counterpoint to the rhythmic squeak of the windmills. The horses' hooves sounded loud on the packed dirt of the road.
"Like at the ferry," Hurin muttered, "but different."
He rode hunched in his saddle, head down as if he were trying to hide behind his own shoulders.
"Violence done, but I don't know. It was bad here. It smells bad."
"Uno," Ingtar said. "Take one file and search the houses. If you find anyone, bring them to me in the square. Do not frighten them this time, though. I want answers, not people running for their lives."
He led the other soldiers toward the center of the village as Uno got his 10 dismounted. Rand hesitated, looking around. The creaking doors, the squealing windmills, the horses' hooves all made too much noise, as if there were not another sound in the world. He scanned the houses. The curtains in an open window beat against the outside of the house. They all seemed lifeless. With a sigh, he got down and walked to the nearest house, then stopped, staring at the door.
"It's just a door. What are you afraid of?"
He wished he did not feel as if there was something waiting on the other side. He pushed it open. Inside was a tidy room, or had been. The table was set for a meal, ladder-backed chairs gathered around, some plates already served. A few flies buzzed above bowls of turnips and peas, and more crawled on a cold roast, sitting in its own congealed grease. There was a slice half-carved from the roast, the fork still standing stuck in the meat, and the carving knife lying partway in a platter, as if dropped. Rand stepped inside. Blink. A smiling, bald-headed man in rough clothes laid a slice of meat on a plate held by a woman with a worn face. She was smiling too, though. She added peas and turnips to the plate and passed it to one of the children lining the table. There were half a dozen children, boys and girls, from nearly grown down to barely tall enough to look over the table. The woman said something, and the girl taking the plate from her laughed. The man started to cut another slice. Suddenly another girl screamed, pointing at the door to the street. The man dropped the carving knife and whirled. Then he screamed too, face tight with horror, and snatched up a child. The woman grabbed another and motioned desperately to the others, her mouth working frantically, silently. They all scrabbled toward a door in the back of the room. That door burst open and... blink. Rand could not move. The flies buzzing over the table sounded louder. His breath made a cloud in front of his mouth. Blink. A smiling, bald-headed man in rough clothes laid a slice of meat on a plate held by a woman with a worn face. She was smiling too, though. She added peas and turnips to the plate and passed it to one of the children lining the table. There were half a dozen children, boys and girls, from nearly grown down to barely tall enough to look over the table. The woman said something, and the girl taking the plate from her laughed. The man started to cut another slice. Suddenly, another girl screamed, pointing at the door to the street. The man dropped the carving knife and whirled. Then he screamed too, face tight with horror, and snatched up a child. The woman grabbed another and motioned desperately to the others, her mouth working frantically, silently. They all scrabbled toward the door in the back of the room. That door burst open and... blink. Rand struggled, but his muscles seemed frozen. The room was colder. He wanted to shiver, but he could not move even that much. Flies crawled all over the table. He groped for the void. The sour light was there, but he did not care. He had to... blink. A smiling, bald-headed man in rough clothes laid a slice of meat on a plate held by a woman with a worn face. She was smiling too, though. She added peas and turnips to the plate and passed it to one of the children lining the table. There were half a dozen children, boys and girls, from nearly grown down to barely tall enough to look over the table. The woman said something, and the girl taking the plate from her laughed. The man started to cut another slice. Suddenly, another girl screamed, pointing at the door to the street. The man dropped the carving knife and whirled. Then he screamed too, face tight with horror, and snatched up a child. The woman grabbed another and motioned desperately to the others, her mouth working frantically, silently. They all scrabbled toward a door in the back of the room. That door burst open and... blink. The room was freezing. So cold. Flies blackened the table. The walls were a shifting mass of flies. The floor, the ceiling, all black with them. They crawled on Rand, covering him. Crawled over his face, his eyes, into his nose, his mouth. Light help me, cold. The flies buzzed like thunder. Cold. It penetrated the void, mocking the emptiness, encasing him in ice. Desperately he reached for the flickering light. His stomach twisted, but the light was warm. Warm. Hot. He was hot. Suddenly he was tearing at... something. He did not know what or how. Cobwebs made of steel. Moonbeams carved from stone. They crumbled at his touch, but he knew he had not touched anything. They shriveled and melted with the heat that surged through him. Heat like a forge fire. Heat like the world burning. Heat like... it was gone. Panting, he looked around with wide eyes. A few flies lay on the half-carved roast in the platter. Dead flies. Six flies. Only six. There were more in the bowls, half a dozen tiny black specks among the cold vegetables. All dead. He staggered out into the street. Matt was just coming out of a house across the street, shaking his head. "Nobody there," he told Perrin, still on his horse. "It looks like they just got up in the middle of supper and walked away." A shout came from the square. "They found something," Perrin said, digging his heels into his horse's flanks. Matt scrambled into his saddle and galloped after him. Rand mounted Red more slowly. The stallion shied as if feeling his unease. He glanced at the houses as he rode slowly toward the square, but he could not make himself look at them for long. Matt went in one, and nothing happened to him. He resolved not to set foot inside another house in that village, no matter what. Booting Red, he quickened his pace. Everyone was standing like statues in front of a large building with wide double doors. Rand did not think it could be an inn. There was no sign, for one thing. Perhaps a village meeting place. He joined the silent circle and stared along with the rest. There was a man spread-eagled across the doors with thick spikes through wrists and shoulders. More spikes had been driven into his eyes to hold his head up. Dark, dried blood made fans down his cheeks. Scuff marks on the wood behind his boots showed that he had been alive when it was done. When it began, anyway. Rand's breath caught. Not a man. Those black clothes, blacker than black, had never been worn by any human. The wind flapped an end of the cloak caught behind the body, which it did not always, he knew too well. The wind did not always touch those clothes. But there had never been any eyes in that pale, bloodless face. Murdral, he breathed, and it was as if his speaking released all the others. They began to move again and breathe.
Who?
Matt began, and had to stop to swallow.
Who could do this to a Fade?
His voice squeaked at the end.
I don't know, Ingtar said. I do not know.
He looked around, examining faces, or perhaps counting to be sure everyone was there. And I do not think we will learn anything here.
We ride. Mount! Hurin, find the trail out of this place.
Yes, my lord. Yes, with pleasure.
That way, my lord. They're still heading south.
They rode away, leaving the dead Murdral where it hung, the wind stirring its black cloak. Hurin was first beyond the wall, not waiting on Ingtar for a change, but Rand came close behind him. Chapter 11 Glimmers of the Pattern. For once, Ingtar called a halt to the day's march with the sun still golden above the horizon. The toughened Shinarans were feeling the effects of what they had seen in the village. Ingtar had not stopped so early before, and the campsite he chose had the look of a place that could be defended. It was a deep hollow, almost round, and big enough to hold all the men and horses comfortably. A sparse thicket of scrub oak and leather leaf covered the outer slopes. The rim itself stood more than high enough to hide anyone in the campsite, even without the trees. The height nearly passed for a hill in that country.
All I'm bloody saying, he heard Uno tell Ragan as they dismounted, is that I bloody saw her burn you, just before we found the goat-kissing Hathman. The same flaming woman as at the Flaming Fairy. She was there, and then she bloody wasn't. You say what you bloody want to, but you watch how you flaming say it, or I'll bloody skin you myself, and burn the goat-kissing hide, you sheep-gutted milk-drinker.
Rand paused with one foot on the ground and the other still on the stirrup.
The same woman? But there wasn't any woman at the ferry. Just some curtains blowing in the wind. And she couldn't have gotten to that village ahead of us if there had been.
The village. He shied away from the thought. Even more than the Fade nailed to the door, he wanted to forget that room, and the flies, and the people who were there and not there. The Halfman had been real. Everybody had seen that. But the room. Maybe I'm finally going mad. He wished Moraine was there to talk to.
Wishing for an Aes Sedai. You are a fool. You're well out of that, now stay out. But am I out? What happened there?
Pack horses and supplies in the middle,
Ingtar commanded, as the lancers went about setting up camp.
Rub the horses down, then saddle them again in case we must move quickly. Every man sleeps by his mount, and there'll be no fires tonight. Watch changes every 2 hours. Uno, I want scouts out, as far as they can ride and return before dark. I want to know what is out there.
He's feeling it, Rand thought. It isn't just some dark friends and a few Trollocs and maybe a Fade anymore.
Just some dark friends and a few Trollocs and maybe a Fade? Even a few days before, there would not have been any just about it. Even in the Borderlands, even with the blight less than a day's ride, dark friends and Trollocs and Murdral had been bad enough for a nightmare then. Before he had seen a Murdral nailed to a door.
What in the light could have done that? What not in the light?
Before he had walked into a room where a family had had their supper and their laughter cut off.
I must have imagined it. I must have.
Even in his own head, he did not sound very convincing. He had not imagined the wind on the tower top, or the Amarlin saying,
Rand!
He jumped as Ingtar spoke at his shoulder.
Are you going to stay all night with one foot in the stirrup?
Rand put his other foot on the ground.
Ingtar, what happened back at that village?
Trollocs took them. The same as the people at the ferry. That is what happened. The Fade?
Ingtar shrugged and stared down at a flat canvas-wrapped bundle, large and square in his arms. He stared at it as if he saw hidden secrets he would rather not know.
The Trollocs took them for food. They do it in villages and farms near the Blight, too, sometimes, if a raid gets past the border towers in the night. Sometimes we get the people back, and sometimes not. Sometimes we get them back and almost wish we hadn't. Trollocs don't always kill before they start butchering. And half-men like to have their fun. That's worse than what the Trollocs do. His voice was as steady as if he were talking of every day, and perhaps he was for a Shinaran soldier. Rand took a deep breath to steady his stomach. The Fade back there didn't have any fun, Ingtar. What could nail a murdral to a door alive? Ingtar hesitated, shaking his head, then pushed the big bundle at Rand. Here. Moraine Sedai told me to give you this at the first camp south of the Aranin. I don't know what it is, but she said you would need it. She said to tell you to take care of it. Your life may depend on it. Rand took it reluctantly. His skin prickled at the touch of the canvas. There was something soft inside. Cloth, maybe. He held it gingerly. He doesn't want to think about the murderall either. What happened in that room? He realized suddenly that for him, the Fade, or even that room, was preferable to thinking about what Moraine might have sent him. I was told to tell you at the same time that if anything happens to me, the lances will follow you. Me? Rand gasped, forgetting the bundle and everything else. Ingtar met his incredulous stare with a calmed nod. That's crazy. I've never led anything but a flock of sheep, Ingtar. They would not follow me anyway. Besides, Moraine can't tell you who your second is. It's Uno. Uno and I were called to Lord Agomar the morning we left. Moraine said I was there, but it was Lord Agomar who told me. You are second, Rand.
But why, Ingtar? Why?
Moraine's hand was bright and clear in it, hers and the Ammerlin's, pushing him along the path they had chosen, but he had to ask. The Shinaran looked as if he did not understand it either, but he was a soldier, used to odd commands in the endless war along the Blight. I heard rumors from the women's apartments that you were really a... He spread gauntleted hands. No matter. I know you deny it, just as you deny the look of your own face. Moraine Sedai says you're a shepherd, but I never saw a shepherd with a heron-mark blade. No matter. I'll not claim I would have chosen you myself, but I think you have it in you to do what is needed. You will do your duty, if it comes to it. Rand wanted to say it was no duty of his, but instead he said, Uno knows about this. Who else, Ingtar? All the lances. When we Shinarans ride, every man knows who is next in line if the man in command falls. A chain unbroken right down to the last man left, even if he's nothing but a horseholder. That way, you see, even if he is the last man, he is not just a straggler running and trying to stay alive. He has the command, and duty calls him to do what must be done. If I go to the last embrace of the mother, the duty is yours. You will find the horn, and you will take it where it belongs. You will. There was a peculiar emphasis in Ingtar's last words. The bundle in Rand's arms seemed to weigh 10 stone.
Light. She could be 100 leagues off, and she still reaches out and tugs the leash. This way, Rand, that way. You're the dragon reborn, Rand. I don't want the duty, Ingtar. I will not take it. Light, I'm just a shepherd. Why won't anybody believe that?
You will do your duty, Rand. When the man at the top of the chain fails, everything below him falls apart. Too much is falling apart. Too much already. Peace favor your sword, Randalthor.
Ingtar, I...
But Ingtar was walking away, calling to see if Uno had the scouts out yet. Rand stared at the bundle in his arms and licked his lips. He was afraid he knew what was in it. He wanted to look, yet he wanted to throw it in a fire without opening it. He thought he might, if he could be sure it would burn without anyone seeing what was inside, if he could be sure what was inside would burn at all. But he could not look there, where other eyes than his might see. He glanced around the camp. The Shinarans were unloading the pack animals, some already handing out a cold supper of dried meat and flatbread. Matt and Perrin tended their horses, and Loyal sat on a stone reading a book, with his long-stemmed pipe clenched between his teeth and a wisp of smoke curling above his head. Gripping the bundle, as if afraid he might drop it, Rand sneaked into the trees.
He knelt in a small clearing sheltered by thick foliaged branches and set the bundle on the ground. For a time, he just stared at it.
She wouldn't have. She couldn't.
A small voice answered, "Oh, yes, she could. She could and would." Finally, he set about untying the small knots in the cords that bound it. Neat knots, tied with a precision that spoke loudly of Moraine's own hand. No servant had done this for her. She would not have dared let any servant see. When he had the last cord unfastened, he opened out what was folded inside with hands that felt numb, then stared at it, his mouth full of dust. It was all of one piece, neither woven nor dyed nor painted. A banner, white as snow, big enough to be seen the length of a field of battle. And across it marched a rippling figure like a serpent scaled in gold and crimson, but a serpent with four scaled legs, each tipped with five golden claws. A serpent with eyes like the sun, and a golden lion's mane. He had seen it once before, and Moraine had told him what it was. The banner of Luz Theron Talamon. Luz Theron Kinslayer, in the War of the Shadow. The banner of the dragon.
"Look at that! Look what he's got now!"
Matt burst into the clearing. Perrin came after him more slowly.
"First fancy coats," Matt snarled, "and now a banner. We'll hear no end of lording it now, with—"
Matt got close enough to see the banner clearly, and his jaw dropped.
"Light!"
He stumbled back a step.
"Burn me!"
He had been there, too, when Moraine named the banner. So had Perrin. Anger boiled up in Rand, anger at Moraine and the Ammerlin seat, pushing him, pulling him. He snatched up the banner in both hands and shook it at Matt, words boiling out uncontrollably.
"That's right, the dragon's banner."
Matt took another step back.
"Moraine wants me to be a puppet on Tarvalin's strings, a false dragon for the Aes Sedai. She's going to push it down my throat whatever I want. But I will not be used."
Matt had backed up against a tree trunk.
"A false dragon,"
he swallowed.
"You? That's crazy."
Perrin had not retreated. He squatted down with his thick arms on his knees and studied Rand with those bright golden eyes. In the evening shadows, they seemed to shine. "If the Aes Sedai want you for a false dragon," he paused, frowning, thinking things through. Finally, he said quietly,
"Rand, can you channel?"
Matt gave a strangled gasp. Rand let the banner drop. He hesitated only a moment before nodding wearily.
"I did not ask for it. I don't want it, but I do not think I know how to stop it."
The room with the flies came back unbidden to his mind.
"I don't think they'll let me stop." "Burn me," Matt breathed. "Blood and bloody ashes. They'll kill us, you know. All of us. Perrin and me as well as you. If Ingtar and the others find out, they will cut our bloody throats for dark friends. Light. They'll probably think we are part of stealing the horn and killing those people in Faldara."
"Shut up, Matt," Perrin said calmly.
"Don't tell me to shut up. If Ingtar doesn't kill us, Rand will go mad and do it for him. Burn me! Burn me!"
Matt slid down the tree to sit on the ground.
"Why didn't they gentle you? If the Aes Sedai know, why didn't they gentle you? I never heard of them letting a man who can wield the power just walk away."
"They don't all know," Rand sighed.
"The Ammerlin." "The Ammerlin seat? She knows? Light, no wonder she looked at me so strange."
"And Moraine told me I'm the dragon reborn. And then they said I could go wherever I wanted. Don't you see, Matt? They're trying to use me."
"Doesn't change you being able to channel," Matt muttered.
"If I were you, I'd be halfway to the Arath Ocean by now. And I would not stop until I found some place where there were no Aes Sedai, and never likely to be any. And no people. I mean, well..."
"Shut up, Matt," Perrin said.
"Why are you here, Rand? The longer you stay around people, the more likely it is somebody will find out and send for Aes Sedai. Aes Sedai who won't tell you to go on about your business."
He paused, scratching his head over that.
"And Matt's right about Ingtar. I don't doubt he would name you Darkfriend and kill you. Kill all of us, maybe.
He seems to like you, but he'd still do it, I think. A false dragon?
So would the others.
Massima wouldn't need that much excuse for you. So why aren't you gone?
Rand shrugged.
I was going, but first the Ammerlin came, and then the horn was stolen, and the dagger, and Moraine said Matt was dying, and...
Light, I thought I could stay with you until we found the dagger, at least. I thought I could help with that. Maybe I was wrong.
You came because of the dagger? Matt said quietly.
He rubbed his nose and grimaced.
I never thought of that. I never thought you wanted to...
Ah! Are you feeling all right? I mean, you aren't going mad already, are you?
Rand dug a pebble out of the ground and threw it at him.
Ouch!
Matt rubbed his arm.
I was just asking. I mean, all those fancy clothes and all that talk about being a lord. Well, that isn't exactly right in the head.
I was trying to get rid of you, fool. I was afraid I'd go mad and hurt you.
His eyes dropped to the banner and his voice lowered.
I will eventually if I don't stop it. Light, I don't know how to stop it.
That is what I'm afraid of, Matt said, standing.
No offense, Rand, but I think I'll just sleep as far away from you as I can, if you don't mind. That's if you are staying. I heard about a fellow who could channel once. A merchant's guard told me. Before the Red Aja found him, he woke one morning and his whole village was smashed flat. All the houses, all the people, everything but the bed he was sleeping in. Like a mountain had rolled over them.
Perrin said, In that case, Matt, you should sleep cheek by jowl with him.
I may be a fool, but I intend to be a live fool.
Matt hesitated, looking sideways at Rand.
Look, I know you came along to help me, and I am grateful. I really am. But you just are not the same anymore. You understand that, don't you?
He waited as if he expected an answer. None came. Finally, he vanished into the trees back toward the camp.
What about you? Rand asked.
Perrin shook his head, shaggy curls swinging.
I don't know, Rand. You are the same, but then again you aren't. A man channeling. My mother used to frighten me with that when I was little. I just do not know.
He stretched out his hand and touched a corner of the banner.
I think I would burn this or bury it if I were you. Then I'd run so far, so fast, no Aes Sedai would ever find me.
Matt was right about that. He stood up, squinting at the western sky, beginning to turn red with the sinking sun.
Time to get back to the camp. You think on what I said, Rand. I'd run. But maybe you can't run. Think of that, too.
His yellow eyes seemed to look inward, and he sounded tired.
Sometimes you can't run.
Then he was gone, too. Rand knelt there, staring at the banner spread out on the ground.
Well, sometimes you can run, he muttered.
Only maybe she gave me this to make me run. Maybe she has something waiting for me if I run.
I won't do what she wants, I won't. I'll bury it right here.
But she said my life may depend on it, and Aes Sedai never lie so you can see it.
Suddenly his shoulders shook with silent laughter.
Now I'm talking to myself. Maybe I am going mad already.
When he returned to the camp, he carried the banner wrapped in the canvas once more, tied with knots less neat than Moraine's had been. The light had begun to fail, and the shadow of the rim covered half the hollow. The soldiers were settling in, all with their horses by their sides, lances propped to hand. Matt and Perrin were bedding down alongside their horses. Rand gave them a sad look, then fetched Red, standing where he had been left with his reins dangling, and went to the other side of the hollow where Huron had joined Loyal. The Ogier had given over reading and was examining the half-buried stone in which he had been sitting, tracing something on the stone with the long stem of his pipe. Huron stood and gave Rand something just short of a bow.
Hope you don't mind me making my bed here, Lord. Rand. I was just listening to the builder here.
There you are, Rand, Loyal said. You know, I think this stone was worked once. See, it's weathered, but it looks as if it was a column of some kind. And there are markings also. I can't quite make them out, but they look familiar somehow.
Maybe you'll be able to see them better in the morning, Rand said. He pulled the saddlebags from Red. I'll be glad of your company, Huron.
I'm glad of anybody's company who isn't afraid of me. How much longer can I have it, though?
He shifted everything into one side of the saddlebag, spare shirts and breeches and woolen stockings, sewing kit, tinder box, tin plate and cup, a greenwood box with knife and fork and spoon, a packet of dried meat and flatbread for emergency rations, and all the other traveler's necessities, then stuffed the canvas-wrapped banner into the empty pocket. It bulged, the straps barely reaching the buckles, but then the other side bulged now too. It would do. Loyal and Huron seemed to sense his mood, leaving him in silence while he stripped saddle and bridle from Red, rubbed the big bay down with tufts of grass torn from the ground, then resaddled him. Rand refused their offer of food. He did not think he could have stomached the best meal he had ever seen just then. All three of them made their beds there beside the stone, a simple matter of a blanket folded for a pillow and cloak to cover. The camp was silent now, but Rand lay awake past the fall of full dark. His mind darted back and forth. The banner.
What is she trying to make me do?
The village. What could kill a fade like that? Worst of all, the house in the village.
Did it really happen? Am I going mad already? Do I run or do I stay? I have to stay. I have to help Matt find the dagger.
An exhausted sleep finally came, and with sleep, unbidden, the void surrounded him, flickering with an uneasy glow that disturbed his dreams. Padan Fane stared northward out into the night, past the only fire in his camp, smiling a fixed smile that never touched his eyes. He still thought of himself as Padan Fane. Padan Fane was the core of him, but he had been changed, and he knew it. He knew many things now, more than any of his old masters could suspect. He had been a dark friend long years before Baalzaman summoned him and set him on the track of the three young men from Emmons Field, distilling what he knew of them, distilling him, and feeding the essence back so that he could feel them, smell where they had been, follow wherever they ran, especially the one. A part of him still cringed, remembering what Baalzaman had done to him. But it was a small part, hidden, suppressed. He was changed. Following the three had led him into Shadar Logoth. He had not wanted to go, but he had had to obey. Then. And in Shadar Logoth, Fane drew a deep breath and fingered the ruby-hilted dagger at his belt. That had come from Shadar Logoth, too. It was the only weapon he carried, the only one he needed. It felt like a part of him. He was whole within himself now. That was all that mattered. He cast a glance to either side of his fire. The 12 dark friends who were left, their once fine clothes now rumpled and dirty, huddled in the darkness to one side, staring not at the fire but at him. On the other squatted his Trollocs, 20 in number, the all-too-human eyes in those animal-twisted men's faces, following his every move like mice watching a cat. It had been a struggle at first, waking each morning to find himself not completely whole, to find the Murdral back in command, raging and demanding they go north, to the Blight, to Sheol Ghul. But bit by bit, those mornings of weakness grew shorter, until he remembered the feel of the hammer in his hand, driving the spikes in, and he smiled. This time it did touch his eyes with the joy of sweet memory. Weeping from the dark caught his ear, and his smile faded. I should never have let the Trollocs take so many. An entire village to slow them down. If those few houses at the ferry had not been deserted, perhaps. But Trollocs were greedy by nature, and in the euphoria of watching the Murdral die, he had not paid attention as he should. He glanced at the Trollocs. Any one of them was nearly twice as tall as he, strong enough to break him to flinders with one hand. Yet they edged back, still crouching.
Kill them. All. You may feed, but then make a pile of everything that remains. For our friends to find. Put the heads on top. Neatly now.
He laughed and cut it off short.
Go!
The Trollocs scrambled away. drawing scythe-like swords and raising spiked axes. In moments, shrieks and bellows rose from where the villagers were bound. Pleas for mercy and children's screams were cut off by solid thuds and unpleasant squishing noises, like melons being broken. Fane turned his back on the cacophony to look at his dark friends. They were his too, body and soul, such souls as they had left. Every one of them was as mired as deeply as he had been, before he found his way out. Every one with nowhere to go except to follow him. Their eyes clung to fearful pleading. "You think they will grow hungry again before we find another village or a farm? They may. You think I will be letting them have some more of you? Well, perhaps one or two. There aren't any more horses to spare."
"The others were only commoners," one woman managed in an unsteady voice.
Dirt streaked her face above a finely cut dress that marked her as a merchant and wealthy. Smears stained the good gray cloth, and a long tear marred her skirt.
"They were peasants. We have served. I have served."
Fane cut her off, his easy tone making his words all the harder.
"What are you to me? Less than peasants. Herd cattle for the Trollocs, perhaps? If you want to live, cattle, you must be useful."
The woman's face broke. She sobbed, and suddenly all the rest were babbling, telling him how useful they were. Men and women who had had influence and position before they were called to fulfill their oaths at Faldara. They spilled out the names of important, powerful people whom they knew in the Borderlands, in Kyrian, and other lands. They babbled of the knowledge they alone had of this land or that, of political situations, alliances, intrigues, all the things they could tell him if he let them serve him. The noise of them blended with the sound of the Trolloc's slaughter and fit right in. Fane ignored all of it. He had no fear of turning his back on them, not since they had seen the Fade dealt with, and went to his prize. Kneeling, he ran his hands over the ornate, golden chest, feeling the power locked inside. He had to have a Trolloc carry it. He did not trust the humans enough to load it on a horse and pack saddle. Some dreams of power might be strong enough to overcome even fear of him, but Trollocs never dreamed of anything except killing. And he had not yet puzzled out how to open it. But that would come. Everything would come. Everything. Unsheathing the dagger, he laid it atop the chest before settling himself down beside the fire. That blade was a better guard than Trolloc or human. They had all seen what happened when he used it once. None would come within a span of that bared blade without his command, and then reluctantly. Lying there in his blankets, he stared northward. He could not feel Althor now. The distance between them was too great. Or perhaps Althor was doing his vanishing trick. Sometimes, in the keep, the boy had suddenly vanished from Fane's senses. He did not know how, but always Althor came back, just as suddenly as he had gone. He would come back this time, too.
"This time you come to me, Randalthor. Before I followed you like a dog driven on the trail, but now you follow me."
His laughter was a cackle that even he knew was mad, but he did not care. Madness was a part of him, too.
"Come to me, Althor. The dance is not even begun yet. We'll dance on Toman Head, and I'll be free of you. I'll see you dead at last."